Hey everybody, welcome to the Hoop Talks Live Basketball Summit, is that what we're calling it? I think that's what we're calling it. I'm Sean Woodley, I'm here for Ashley Dawkin because she's a little late, so apologies for that. I'm much less cool and fun and obviously articulate than Ashley. We got a great show for you tonight, very excited. We're going to be starting off a panel with myself and a couple other very smart young people in the industry talking about youth sports basketball. We're going to have the Raptors panel, Raptors roundtable with about 15 Raptors writers, all of which very smart. And then we have the later on panel with Doug Smith, Sherm Hamilton, Eric Smith, Michael Grange. I don't have the list in front of me. I probably should have thought about that. This is Ashley's fault. So let's get the show going. Thank you so much for coming out, and let's start off with the first panel that we're going to be doing about youth sports basketball. First up, you might recognize her from the broadcast of the youth sports women's Final Eight back a couple weeks ago. She was on with Arash Madani from Ryerson Sports Media. It's Jamie Hills. How's it going? And then next up, you may know him from the podcast he co-hosts with me, the Hoop Talks Live podcast, also the CUSN, the Canadian University Sports Network on the internet. It's Mitch Robson. How's it going, Mitch? Guys. My part where I have to be like Ashley's done now, so that's good. We can just let this thing go. You guys are far more versed in youth sports basketball than I am. I, for people's background, I do PA for McMaster Basketball, so my knowledge is pretty much confined to that program. But you guys know your stuff. You guys are excellent at this stuff, and it seems like a pretty good time to get into the youth sports basketball scene because there is a lot of optimism about it, but also a lot of questions kind of facing what's going on with youth sports basketball in this country right now. So for those who don't know, the youth sports basketball championships, men's and women's, took place a couple weeks ago. The Carleton women won their first ever title. The third, damn right. I agree also. Yes, that is a good take. So Carleton ended up winning the women's championship. The men's side, Carleton had won pretty much every championship since these guys were born, essentially. And they ended up losing in the semifinals to Ryerson. Ryerson ended up losing in the final. There was not a travel in the last play. Don't worry.
There was definitely travel.
So they ended up losing to Calgary, and that is a thing that we should probably talk about as well. So maybe we can start with that. The Carleton men's basketball team, which has dominated the sport. They've won every year except for two since 2003. Dave Smart has created just like a monster of a program where every single year, it doesn't seem to matter who's going in or out. They're just really good. They lost this year. And I think maybe, you know, just from, you know, anecdotally watching some of the teams in the OUA and just watching, you know, in that Final Eight, it seems like the level of play is upping across the board. Is it a good thing that Carleton, I guess this is a two-pronged question. First of all, and we'll start with you, Mitch, is it a good thing that the Carleton basketball program had the run that they just had where they won that many titles over the course of 15 years, 13 and 15 or whatever it was? And is it a good thing that they lost this year?
I mean, probably. I mean, as someone that goes to Ryerson, it hurt a lot losing to them the last couple years, but we finally did it this year, so that was nice. I think that we say, like, in professional sports, dynasties are good for sports, right? Like, whether it be the NBA, any league. And I mean, at least people around the world kind of knew Carleton, like whether it's a paper in the States or a media outlet in the States that did a story on Carleton winning all those championships. That was kind of good for the sport as a whole because it raised that profile. But from being actually in it, it kind of defeats the purpose of what college sports are all about, which is students coming out and supporting their fellow student athletes, because a lot of people are resigned to the fact that Carleton's going to win. Why am I going to go support my own team? So I think that them losing, and you kind of saw it with the spike in viewership on the championship game this year after the numbers were really bad last year, that it overall is a good thing for the sport.
Yeah, even like I went to Carleton, I graduated in 2014, and even then they were in the middle of like a 5-5 run, and it, like, no one ever went to games. I rarely went to games because it was like, what does it matter? I would go to the one each year that they held where the Senators play, whatever the hell the arena's called now, and they'd play Ottawa U each year, and that was a great time, and you'd go to the national championship when it was there, but it just, it didn't really feel like it was worth your time because you knew you were going to go see them play Lakehead and win by 50, so I totally agree there. Jamie, just the same question to you. Like, do you think, and where do you think it goes from here now that, that Carleton's lost? Is it, do you think it's just going to be a 1 year blip, do you think? Or do you think that loss and just sort of the general sort of, I feel like Carleton's kind of had this thing where everyone's had to catch up to them, and now we're getting to the point where there's Ryerson, there's Ottawa, which is, I think, a couple years ahead of the time in terms of kind of reaching near that level of Carleton. You have the Western schools, you have Calgary, you have Alberta, which was a wonderfully entertaining team to watch this season. Are you, looking ahead, are you thinking maybe this is going to kind of change a little bit? Maybe Carleton isn't going to be the annual powerhouse, and maybe we'll see different winners in the next 3-4 years?
I think there's been a lot of teams that are right behind Carleton. You just don't see it because they win at Nationals all the time. They're a different beast when they get to that tournament. But the last 2 years until this year, Ryerson beat them in the OUA final, right? So there are teams that have been behind them. They've been sitting there kind of waiting to get their time. But Dave Smart's coached that team so well to know how to play a national tournament. They get that format, the one game, one day off, two games. They know it. They know it so well. So I think there has always been teams waiting to come out. We saw it this year. Carleton's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
They really know what they're doing. So they'll be back at Nationals next year. They'll be excelling. But maybe there's a time and an opportunity for other teams to kind of make their way in there.
And we'll get to the women's side of things as well, because I don't want to leave that untouched. But I think this is interesting. So the men, I think the biggest reason that we've seen a bit of an uprising with some of these teams, and I think, to your point, there have always been teams kind of on the fringes, but I think they're just watching this season. I think there were more, perhaps you could argue, that are really sort of on that level almost. And I think the biggest thing is coaching. And a lot of it is just having a couple of really great coaches in Dave Smart and Roy Ranna, and sort of their coaching trees kind of fan out. Mitch, for you, how important is coaching going to be as we move forward? Because I feel like there are a lot of teams when I do my job, I'm sitting right next to the assistant coach. You can kind of tell which coaches are kind of in it and sort of know what and kind of have a grasp on their teams. You know, Charles Kissy with Brock is one. I know Ryerson people love Charles Kissy at Brock. Patrick Tatum, from my experience at McMaster, he came in this season and that team started 2-12, finished the season 10-14, and I think it was entirely due to his coaching. It was all players who he didn't recruit and they just got good. There's Justin Suresh at Laurier. It just seems like across the board, there's just there's more coaching coming up. And I think, I think it's super important for trying to, because you can tell which teams are coached well and which ones aren't. And the ones that are coached well are typically the ones that you're going to see at Nationals. So where do you kind of see the coaching, sort of flow chart going from here?
Well, it's kind of like you saw with Pat, the year that Ryerson actually went number one for the first time in the country was the year that Roy took the year off and he kind of coached that team up with guys that Roy had had a good year with the year before. They made it to the semifinals at Nationals with the home tournament, but they had never reached that level when Pat kind of sped everything up, took more of an NBA approach with a lot of speed, a lot of threes, a lot of full court press. I think it all started with Scott Morrison at Lakehead, who's now an assistant with the Celtics. So that kind of proved that some of these coaches at this level have a lot of potential and they can get to that NBA level. And you mentioned Charles, who's done a couple internships with the Raptors, and Roy did some internships with the Jazz at Summer League a couple of years ago. So the people in the basketball world that are really important on the national side, whether it be NBA or NCAA, know who these guys are. And I think that you've seen now with Ranna being the head coach of the national team at these qualifying games that this level of basketball needs to be respected because it's getting coached at a very high level.
And we're seeing with guys like Roy and Dave, I think the next question for them is where they go from here. And you mentioned the internships that Roy's done, for example, and Dave and Roy both being involved with the national team. And you mentioned Scott Morrison with the Celtics now. I wonder almost if it's, and I can point this towards you, Jamie, I wonder if it would be a better thing for the game as a whole, as good as Roy Ranna and Dave Smart have been to the development of the game in the OUA and for their own programs. I wonder, do you think, Jamie, them sort of taking the next step. I know Dave Smart has kind of been, vocal about not really wanting to go anywhere. He kind of seems pretty happy where he is in Ottawa, happy with what he's doing, but he's had offers from the NCAA. I think it was reported in the Grantland story that was written a few years back that it would take something like $500,000 a year for him to go south. It feels like he's gotten offers like that and still hasn't moved. But do you think it would almost be a good thing if these top-level coaches in Canada moved on and sort of blazed the path towards, showing, up-and-coming coaches themselves? This is a place you can go and move on to higher things, so maybe that attracts more coaches? Or do you think it's best if they just kind of stay here and keep sort of building the momentum of U Sports basketball here?
I think from a selfish perspective, we want to keep them here, right? There's not that many opportunities for coaches in Canada. There's way fewer schools. There's way fewer high-level opportunities. So to keep them here is better. And if Dave's having so much success, to use him as the example, at Carleton, people are starting to know his name around the country, even outside of basketball. Like, other people in U Sports, they know the name Dave Smart. So if you can keep that recognition going for yourself and for your program, and you're building the name of U Sports basketball, I don't really think that, I mean, there's obviously going to be coaches who do want to pursue further options, who do want to go further, but a lot of these coaches are now so invested in what is starting to develop, and it's nowhere near where the NCAA is at, but it's starting to build some kind of forward momentum, and I think that's where they need to keep it.
Fair enough. So I we haven't touched on the women's game yet, and I think we should do that because the women's tournament this year was excellent. Carleton ended up winning, as I mentioned, in a blowout, but the semifinals games, hell yeah. The semi games were fantastic, and you know, the OUA was super competitive this season. And I feel like, just anecdotally again, from me watching, you know, teams come into Hamilton week after week, it feels like the level, maybe the top flight teams in U Sports women, on the women's side, aren't quite at like the, you know, the dominant, you know, we're going to reign over this sport for a decade type level. But it does feel like there's a bit more parity, a bit more in terms of like a higher floor for a lot of these teams. I mean, there are a lot of men's teams that like, that just, there's not a whole lot there, right? And a lot of the women's teams, aside from like one or two schools, seem to at least have a baseline in place. Do you think there's a reason for that?
I think that's a more recent development, because for a while there was like a lot of dominance coming from SFU, UBC, and then Windsor winning five in a row. But since Windsor lost, then it's starting to, like, it's changing a lot more, and there are a lot more teams that are having their foot in there. But you can't really, like, glance over the fact that the Carleton women went undefeated this season. So
hell yeah, they did.
It wasn't really a surprise to see them in the national final. It wasn't a surprise to see them winning that game, because they were holding teams to 45 points a game. Like, they were absolutely dominating this season. So, like, yes, there are teams that are closer. There is a lot of... There's a lot of closeness in that competition, but there is still a dominant aspect to it. It's just not necessarily as obvious.
I guess we can move forward a little bit to some of the bigger questions that are facing U Sports basketball right now. And I think the one is probably TV coverage. And I'm going to get to this now because we're already running out of time, because we like to talk. The tournament was broadcast this year, did record numbers, you know, both women's and men's. The women's final got the primetime spot slot this year, which is pretty awesome. And, you know, it wasn't a particularly close game, but it was great to see them there. You did a fantastic job on that broadcast, by the way. Yay! So there's an issue, though, with the amount that I think U Sports gets broadcast. And, you know, it's a very chicken or egg kind of thing, because should it be on the networks to say, hey, this is a thing happening in our country, it's at a high level, the level's getting better every year, the coaching, blah, 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 everything we've talked about, it's getting to a higher level, maybe we should be putting this on more often? Or is it on U Sports to make it sort of a desirable product for the bigger networks to say, hey, let's broadcast this more than just 3 days a year? Because, you know, as much as the momentum built, what might have been built around having three good days of viewership, I don't think we're going to see just like a bunch, like a weekly U Sports game of the week coming up anytime soon, which is a bit of a bummer, because there's plenty of games and plenty of competition out there and enough teams that you could have a great matchup each week on TV. So I guess the bigger, like, Mitch, we'll start with you. Who does it start with? Is it U Sports trying to make a desirable product for Sportsnet? And we can get into U Sports, because
don't get them started.
I don't think there's
this.
Any U Sports employees here. We can, like, they have a lot to do, I think, with the lack of growth. Obviously, the competition with the NCAA and the networks broadcasting NCAA games all the time, TSN in particular, the focus they put on the Canadians the last few seasons, that plays into it. It's direct competition. But U Sports doesn't do a very good job of making it a desirable product. So, like, does it start with them, do you think, in terms of trying to get the networks on board?
Yeah, I mean, I think that even the rebrand, when they made it U Sports, it kind of sounds stupid, doesn't it? Like, what does U Sports actually mean? What was wrong with CIS? I know they wanted it to be just one name that you wouldn't have to change when you were in Quebec to have the French schools go by it, but CIS sounds a lot more official than U Sports, which just kind of sounds, I don't know, like some
it's
kind
pretty
of,
hacky.
Yeah. So I think that kind of turned off any kind of good momentum they had going, and now I think a little bit it's picking up, but all the coaches, all the players within it, they still call it CIS for the most part. Like, a bunch of schools still have CIS stickers.
And then they correct themselves. Like, they're like, oh, I mean U Sports.
Sorry, yeah. It's a taboo word.
There's still CIS stickers on the floor at a bunch of these schools. Like, yeah, and all the balls. Like, they really botched the rebrand of it, and I think that kind of set themselves back, because it's now just more so an individual school fight of guys trying to get noticed and teams. Like, someone like Manny DeRisa at Ryerson should be on a national stage. Like, he's played basketball with guys who are in the NBA, whether it be at, like, Drew League, Crown League, OVO. They know who he is, and he needs that bigger platform because I think that they're not getting that otherwise, and it's a lack of coverage not just from TV but from local media too. But I don't really know where you kind of start with that.
Yeah, the local media thing's tough because, you know, obviously everything comes down to clicks and viewers. But to go back to the U Sports thing, I don't know if people are familiar with how U Sports does their online streaming. You know, it's not easy to watch games online, which seems counterproductive for an organization that's trying to become, and they talk all this big game but want to be, you know, more higher profile and things like that. But this is not tied to basketball, but for example, the volleyball championships that happened last weekend, they were charging $15 just for 3 days of a subscription to watch volleyball, which is not on TV, which probably wouldn't get viewers any, like, no one's gonna watch that if you have to pay for it, really.
And a lot of their viewers are the students that are going to the schools,
exactly,
that are trying to watch their teams, and they're like, I'm not going to pay $15 to watch volleyball because I don't have an extra $15 kicking around.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really backward system for you know, an organization that, I mean, it's not as much. I mean, obviously it's about money, but it's not quite as much centered around, you know, making insane profits the way say the NCAA is, for example. So you'd think that maybe this would be a trade-off where, you know, and sort of a long-term thing as well, where, hey, we give this for free, we let people watch the championships for free, and maybe that leads to more dedicated, you know, once people are gone from their schools. Like, I don't know how you guys feel, but I've watched less college basketball now than I did, you know, obviously I do it for a job now, but like, I didn't really watch it at all after I left school. And because there's you don't really get roped in while you're there because you have to pay for this and pay for that, and it's nowhere to be found. And the other issue too, and you guys can probably both speak to this because you cover the sports for your school. Jamie, your experience, like, how is U Sports to deal with as just like an organization in order to try to cover them? Like, it's not the easiest thing in the world, right?
Yeah, I kind of went around U Sports and I just went directly to the schools I was trying to talk to, which I probably shouldn't be saying because it's not how you're supposed to do things, but if you go directly to the schools, they're really excited to be having anyone talking about them. They want their athletes to get this kind of coverage. They want that experience for them. If you want to write a profile story about an athlete, they'll give you their cell phone number, like, so easily because they want to have that exposure. But if you try and go through U Sports, you just get this roundabout answer where you're not really getting anyone pointing you where you need to go. And it's frustrating because you're trying to do things the way that you should do them, but instead you're going to go right to the source and just get what you need.
Yeah, Mitch, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, like, they've done really petty stuff. Like, our Twitter header had some pictures from something that apparently we didn't have a license for, and they threatened to sue us. Like,
that's free advertising, really.
Yeah, like, so it's just stuff like that. Like, you have way bigger things to be concerned about, whether than like this student website is using a photo that maybe our person took, but it wasn't exactly like licensed properly. So they just kind of have a problem with priorities of things, and I think that they get hung up on a lot of stuff, and they're very worried that every story we write, it might have one or two negative details about U Sports, and they're concerned that we're trying to like take them down, where we're just trying to cover the athletes themselves, I think, more than anything else.
And I don't think they realize we're trying to work with them. We're trying to promote their product, but instead it's seen as like we're trying to take them down. No, we're trying to recognize maybe this needs a little bit of a restructuring. There needs to be some change to this, but that's in a good way. That's in a positive manner. It's not trying to break down U Sports. We're trying to promote it.
Just imagine like another sports league being like, hey, you can cover us, but only the positive stuff. Like, that would never fly. And that is a bummer. Yeah.
Realistic.
Yeah. And especially when it's students who are trying to do it as well. I mean, to make the experience for, you know, people like you who are in sports media and are trying to use this as a tool to gain experience, for them to make it so difficult is really difficult. To flip it over to the TV networks, you guys obviously have to be careful. You guys work for these networks and stuff and are, you know, you have high aspirations, far higher than mine. So you have to be careful here. But what's the role of the networks here? Do you think there should be more of a concerted effort on their side? And in fairness to Sportsnet, they have a great online presence. They have a great U Sports page if you want to go read stuff there. But obviously the TV, there's the championships. There's the odd football game here and there. And that's about it. Where does the responsibility lie with them to try to sort of up the profile of U Sports to make it sort of a symbiotic relation between the two of them?
I think the issue is that it comes back to money. As much as we want to avoid that it does, it always comes back to that. And until there's some money coming into and out of U Sports, it's not going to create enough production value. But I also think when they do the broadcast, it's really professionally done. Like, I don't know if you would say the same thing about the men's broadcast, but when I was in Regina...
Toot your own horn much. I'm kidding.
I had to.
I'm kidding.
But it's really well done because they're sending a good crew. They're sending people that they're confident in because they want to put something good out there. If they're putting it on their network, it's going to be good. So it's just a matter of how to get more on there. And I don't really know the answer to that.
Yeah, no, it's really hard to, obviously we're not working for these companies. We're working for Rogers. So we can't really look at the pocketbook and say, hey, this is worth the long-term investment of, hey, maybe you don't make that much money on it this year, but down the road, maybe there's more to be made. But Mitch, I don't know. Do you have anything else to add? What James said?
Yeah, I think it would take probably a leap of faith. Like, it's going to be probably not a gain financially for you, but if you can get some of the television like production trucks like Dome to give you a scaled down production model and something like that, that they're probably going to take a hit on, but you're at least kind of doing someone a favor. I don't know. Maybe you can write it off as charity.
But I don't know how much value they put on social responsibility, right? If you want to go into those concepts of marketing and bringing that into things, is that something that you want to have? Hey, look, we're supporting a local product that is right in our backyard.
I guess, and we don't have much time left, so we'll just get a quick hitter on this. I guess the one issue that remains then, if we're pushing growth and we want it to become this thing where you can watch more than one game, more than 3 days of basketball a year, is there a risk if we continue to push this and if, say, a network does do it, and maybe there's a bidding war between TSN and Sportsnet at some point to try to get, unlikely, yes, I see your face there, Mitch, but maybe there's some sort of bidding war. Maybe some online giant comes in and says, hey, maybe that's another, we didn't really talk about that, but maybe that's another way to sort of YouTube or Twitter or something like that comes in and makes a bid for rights. But at what point do you worry that if it does grow too far, it'll kind of supersede sort of the values it tries to impose, where it is very much a student athlete thing and the student absolutely comes first, as opposed to in the NCAA where that is just a sham. Do you worry that there's a time where, or if we continue to push this and enough money comes into it, where it could kind of cross that border into maybe teams will want to cheat the system, maybe teams will want to, here, this Jordan Henry player from the U18 team, hey, come play for us here and give some money on
Jordan
the table.
Jordan wanted a check, but Ryerson didn't give it to him. So. No, I don't think you can ever get that big because you have such a big booster network at those schools in the NCAA, right, which is fun like that. And I mean, you kind of have that to an extent. I know with football, like Laval is run as a private operation, but on the basketball side, I don't think that would really happen, but it would be nice to see some extra funding. Like I know Ryerson, we're very lucky considering we're like the flagship Nike school for Canadian universities, but a lot of the other schools in the OUA really are tight on resources. So if there was kind of a baseline of funding that came in from some kind of corporate sponsor, I think that's what you're going to have to count on, is some company decides to like, hey, we want to raise the profile, be the one that drives these kids to not only help them achieve their athletic goals, but also support them as student athletes and future professionals and whatever they want to do.
Yeah, TV rights deal, I think, would go a long way to sort of giving that baseline, although they'll probably get funneled to the wrong people because everything is bad and terrible. You guys were not bad and terrible, so thanks for coming up here to Kibitz about the U Sports stuff. Thanks, everyone, for coming out, and the Raptors Roundtable is coming up next.